Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 161st episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include former NHL player Sean Thornton. We'll talk about his memoir, Sean Thornton, Fighting My Way to the Top. We'll also visit with Hall of Fame football coach Bill Snyder about the new book, Bill Snyder, My Football Life and the Rest of the Story. We'll also visit with acclaimed author and speaker Steve Pemberton about his latest book, The Lighthouse Effect. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and of course, share with your friends. Now, naming a pet isn't like naming a kid. You can name your dog, well, anything, and it won't affect their life at all. Now, you can't do that with a kid, and yet, for some reason, people still use the same handful of pet names. Now, Rover.com just released the results of its data on the most popular dog and cat names of 2021, and here are the top five for each. Female dogs, Bella, Luna, Lucy, Daisy, and Lola. Male dogs, Max, Charlie, Milo, Buddy, and Rocky. Female cats, Luna, Bella, Lily, Lucy, and Nala. And male cats, Oliver, Leo, Milo, Charlie, and Max. Got a new book from former NHL player, two-time Stanley Cup champion Sean Thornton. The book called Fighting My Way to the Top. We've got Sean on the line with us today. And Sean, first off, thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, Sean, you put former NHL player in there, Stanley Cup champion. How did you get the author slash put in? How hard was it to add that to your list of slashes, if you will?
Tell you what, it was brought to my table a couple years ago. I declined it the first few times. Dale Arnold, the co-author, had written a book about the Bruins. The publisher asked if they had known of somebody who had an interesting story, and he volunteered me. So after two or three times of declining it, they convinced me that, you know, my unique situation and pathway to the NHL and winning a couple championships could be inspiration for, you know, some kids that have been passed over in their days or are grinding it out or are looking for that little extra to get them motivated to go to the next level. And if it motivates a few people, I guess I'll do it. And obviously for me, I'm asked all the time what I'd like to be remembered for in my playing days, and giving back and having a platform to be able to give back was very important for me. So I want people to be able to read about that, hopefully maybe inspire them to give back a little.
And Sean, this kind of fits in with several conversations I've had over the last couple of weeks. What is it, whenever you get those no's, why were they not able to turn you away from chasing that dream, if you will?
I was brought up in a fairly resilient family in town, and we kind of had a no-quit attitude, and I just wanted it, and I also thought every day was fun when I was playing the game, playing the sport. And that's normally my advice to people that are looking for any advice on their kids or themselves. Like, make it fun. Figure out a way to make it fun, and it's not rocket science. I mean, if it's fun, you'll work harder at it because you're enjoying it. So the sport of hockey was fun to me. Playing a game, being around my teammates was fun, and I enjoyed doing it so much that I figured, you know, if I keep putting my head down and working hard, and I obviously had to make some decisions along the way to navigate me to the next level. But if I keep doing it, I truly believe in myself. I'm going to be able to conquer my dreams.
Now, Sean, as you go brainstorming, sharing stories from before, what was maybe one of the stories that you became reminded of that really sparked some memories for you?
I'm not going to lie to you. So we agreed to do this, I think, in January, and then the world shut down in March. And my idea for the process of writing this book was going to be bringing Dale Arnold with me to my hometown, you know, meeting my family, sitting with my family, fully being, you know, involved in my daily with friends in Boston, down here in Florida on a job, and really the narratives being created out of those hot stoves and interactions. And but then the world shut down, and we had to do basically a year-long phone interview of my career. And it was tough to remember a lot of these things and the dates and all that. But One that came to mind during this process that I probably wasn't even aware of it until we really got deep into thinking about it was, it's widely known, especially in New England, that I did a lot with local children's hospitals and Parkinson's Disease Association. Tried to give back, have my own foundation. I tried to give back, and if I can pinpoint, we probably pinpointed the moment that it really started, and it was when I was in St. John's. I was doing a hospital visit because the teams did them almost monthly, and I saw a girl in the hospital that was getting treatment, and she ended up being one of my best friends in Newfoundland at the time, little sister, and I didn't even know she was sick. And that's probably, if I really, got deep, that's probably what really sparked the passion for wanting to give back and continue to give back. And I probably didn't realize that until this process of writing the book happened.
And Sean, now being in executive staff, business-wise, how has that changed your view of the world of the NHL since leaving in retirement?
What changed is I was always involved with the front office as a player, especially in Boston and here in Florida. I tried to be involved. I tried to understand what everyone did. I tried to make time for all the people in the front office. But the biggest thing for me is the hours that are put in. Even today, after I've been on this side for 4.5 years, I'm like, did we really put that much time in last week? Like, wow, a lot of hours and a lot of effort. As a player, I was on, heavily involved with the players' union. I tried to be around for all the negotiations of the CBA. I tried to have a general understanding of both sides of the coin. And I think that's helped me since being on this side.
What does the word COVID spring up to your mind as far as the NHL and how that has changed the whole way we do everything today?
COVID, two things that come to mind. Make goods, which is my least favorite word combination in the world. Negotiating and creating make goods for all of our partners. I'm glad we had the opportunity to, and the NHL was great about arming us with new assets to try and create value for our partners. Second would be innovate. COVID made us change the way we look at the world, and especially in the world of live entertainment and sports. And, we at the Panthers here, I created the first virtual 5K in pro sports. We were the first well-certified building in hockey and in South Florida because we were going to be the first team to have fans back in the building until the Dallas Stars caught COVID. And really, it makes you think that status quo isn't always the best thing. You should always be trying to, look at what's going to evolve and how you can evolve with it and get ahead of it and be an innovator.
That's right. And again, the book, Sean Thornton, Finding My Way to the Top. Sean, I want to make sure and let folks know where they can find the book, where they can find more information, and then, of course, everything you've got going social media-wise as well, sir.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You find the book on Amazon. It's still on there, I think. Most bookstores have it. I know my friends up in New England had to run out and grab a couple when I was in town last week. So definitely in most bookstores. For social, I have a website, ThorntonFoundation.org. That's where my charity lives. And for social, I personally don't have any social, but my foundation does, and I'm involved with it. So you can catch up on me and all things the foundation. And I think it's at ThorntonFBN is my social handle. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Sean, again, thank you so much for your time today, sir. Looking forward to spending some more time with the book and hope you have a happy holiday season.
Thank you. You too.
Well, today is National Cocoa Day, and if you're in the mood for hot chocolate, there are a lot of ways to make it, even if you're using a mix. A poll asked people what they mix the hot chocolate powder into, and 41% said dairy milk, 31% said water, 8% said non-dairy milk, like almond, soy, rice, oat, and coconut milk. 2% said other, which is intriguing. 15% of the people surveyed claim they don't make hot chocolate. Now, if you're an overachiever, here are some various hot chocolate hacks that you might want to try. Like, first off, add 2 ounces of espresso plus a sprinkle of sugar and cinnamon. Number two, using an oven-safe mug, top it with marshmallows and put it under the broiler. Number three, take the hot chocolate mix and add 1/2 cup of pumpkin puree, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and 1/4 cup of white chocolate chips. Number 4. Stir your hot chocolate recipe with equal parts warmed eggnog. Number 5. Drop a scoop of mint chocolate chip ice cream into a small bowl, then pour hot chocolate over it, along with a whipped cream topping. And number 6. Make it spicy with 1/2 teaspoon of ancho chili powder. And if you do this, consider also adding cinnamon, dark brown sugar, and vanilla extract. Honored and privileged to have the chance to visit with Hall of Fame football coach and author as well, Bill Snyder. And first off, Coach Snyder, it's a privilege to visit with you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Cameron. It's my joy to do so.
Building up the Kansas State football program and all that went along with that, who brought the idea of the book to you in the first place?
Well, basically it was there was a fellow here that had written a book previously by the name of Scott Fritchen, who was the author. And Scott is is a good young man, and he worked for an organization here that released him from his job, and he was without a job. And he was a good young fellow and a good writer, so I knew at some point in time I'd do a book, so I thought that was an appropriate time to give him an opportunity to put some bread on the table. And so I contacted him and asked him, and he was pleased to do so, and that was the beginning.
And as you delve in working on an autobiography, Coach, what was the hardest part of the process? Was it remembering things, or was it maybe trying to weed what was going to be in, what was going to be out?
Well, maybe a little bit of both, but none of it was very difficult, really. Scott and I would schedule whenever I had time, and we'd go up and sit in the suite at the stadium and just talk, and he would tape record everything, and then he'd write it up and let me look at it, make sure that there wasn't anything in there that shouldn't be. And so it was not a difficult process, and there was no time limit on it, so we just did it when time was available.
And as you look back at your career, how do you, now that the coaching time for you is over, how do you quantify what the game of football meant to your life?
Well, it's meant so much. I've been coaching, or was coaching for, over 50 years. And, and that's 24/7. And it's the vast, vast majority of it, and you try to, utilize, some of that time for family. But it distracted from, other things in my life. Never had hobbies. Just didn't do other things. Spent all my time invested in the game of football.
And coaches, aside from the victories on the field, what do you take the most pride in your career?
Well, even more important than the victories, the most significant thing is seeing the impact that our program had on young people as they advanced in their chosen career fields and became successful in life. That was the intent of the program, was to define the capacity for young people to become successful in their lives, and for them to be able to do so, it was the most significant thing for me. And, I've got a countless number of boxes full of letters and emails, et cetera, from young people who, suggest, maybe, and virtually all saying the same thing in different ways. I didn't quite get it then, but I certainly do now, and thank you very much, because it's made a difference in my life, and that's the most meaningful thing to me.
And how did you keep the excitement or the drive alive through the length of career that you had, coaching-wise, and then overseeing things as well when you stepped away?
Well, it, you know, I didn't oversee, you know, anything. When I stepped away, this is the second time that I've done that, you know, I stayed out of the way. Nobody wants you to, you know, mess around with their program, and it's their program at that time. So I kept my distance. During my time, when I did step away, it was difficult. The first time for perhaps a year, and then I got beyond it, and I was very comfortable. This time it took maybe about 6 months. You have those anxieties, but then after that, I'm perfectly comfortable with it, and have no regrets.
The book, Bill Snyder, My Football Life, and the rest of the story. Bill, I want to make sure and let our listeners know, if they want to find more information about the book, where to find it, and also everything else you've got going as well, sir.
Well, I think Amazon is, you can find it in a lot of bookstores. I couldn't tell you which ones they are, but I'm told that Amazon, you can look it up on Amazon, and they deliver it. So it's, you can do it online.
And Coach, we talked about your effect and reach on coaches that are coaching now, and I wanted to get your thoughts real quick as a Sooner fan. You know, I've got to ask you what you think about the hiring of sure. one of your own as well, sir.
Well, they've had a great deal of success down there, and with coaches. Over many, many years, but certainly one of the most successful they've ever had was a product of our program, Bob Stoops. And now Brent Venables, and Brent has had an amazing career at, he was with us and then went to Clemson and has had a great deal of success down there. I think he'll do quite well. I think they made a good decision. I have a great deal of respect for Joe Castiglione, the athletic director there, and I know he's going to make good choices, always have.
That's cool. Well, Coach, it has been a true privilege to have the chance to visit with you today, sir. Coach, hope you have a happy holiday and a happy new year as well, sir.
Same to you, Cameron.
The stretch between Thanksgiving and Christmas is around a month long, but not everyone can keep the holiday cheer going the whole time. A new study asked people how long they could go, starting on Black Friday and then into December, before they felt burned out. Specifically, they asked him when people felt they needed a break from alcohol and partying. And people in most states are already burned out. Now, the state with the most endurance is New Hampshire, and people there can still only make it until December 15th, which is coming up Wednesday. Now, for people in three states, Delaware, New Mexico, and Pennsylvania, the burnout date is today, December 13th. And some states got burned out on holiday cheer well over a week ago. People in Vermont and Montana needed a break by December 3rd, just 7 days into the holidays. Got a new book to talk about, The Lighthouse Effect. We've got author and so many other things we'll include along with that. Steve Pemberton with us today. And first off, Steve, I appreciate you taking the time and excited to talk about this. How about that?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Cameron. I've been looking forward to it.
Now tell us where the Lighthouse Effect, just the idea. I mean, where did the idea first come for you? And this has been a whole mission as well.
It has been. And it really came from the response to my first book. My children were asking, in essence, where my parents were. And I wound up writing a book to answer that question. I thought it was just a family history. What it wound up becoming really was an invitation for other people to share their stories with me. And I think that's true for any of us, Cameron. I mean, you share your story, and it's an opportunity for people to tell you theirs. And then you find these common threads, these common connections that we have that are a lot different than the ones that I think we're sold all the time. Who you voted for, what's your race, what's your gender. There's like this deeper narrative, I think, that's so much more important for us to convey. And so, so you realize, like, wait a minute, I'm on the receiving end of all these stories. And let me get to thinking about these people, like, who are the people who I met along my life journey, who I learned something from, and who I think we could all learn something from. Mm. And so I wound up writing about these 10 people whose impact out in the world is a lot like the lighthouse, the physical structure that is the lighthouse. And boy, that's been such an honor to be part of their lives, to share their stories, how we connected. And then lastly, I would say, I also wanted it very much, Cameron, to be a call to action, to in essence say that each day presents an opportunity for us to be a lighthouse to someone and also to find one for ourselves. Any single one of us with our life experience, just as we are, can have that kind of effect on someone and be affected by someone in that way.
And, you know, we go through the hard times and had some trying times these last couple of weeks. And the other night I was sitting down thinking about, I'd had a rough day, but the problem is I had let it affect the way I treated others. And, yeah, and unfortunately, the way that we deal with the hard times also has a lot to say about us, doesn't it?
It sure does. And in many ways, that's the power of the lighthouse, because the lighthouse knows all about hard times, because the lighthouse, the physical structure that is the lighthouse, it exists in a very turbulent world. I mean, the sea is unforgiving. And so every day is a bad day for the lighthouse by and large, right? Winds and storms and weather. And yet there, despite it all, there it still stands. But it does so because it's on a mission. And that mission is you and I. It's quite literally trying to protect our journey. And it does so by saying, well, let me correct your path, or let me show you another path. And the most impactful people in our lives are a lot like the physical structure that is the lighthouse. They don't judge you. They don't ask you how you came to be in the storm. They don't blame you for not knowing your way. They see, because they see your humanity. And they also know that, you know, your first picture is not your full story. You are not that bad day you just had, right? They know that. And so this ability to see beyond it is something I think that we can all do. And I think it's necessary. Because in our time right now, we are quick to judge as a society. We are quick to anger. We're quick to try and locate you in a different place that doesn't really reflect your life experience in your journey. And it's not serving us well, Cameron. It's really not. So it's incumbent upon all of us to find that different way.
And Steve, through the stories, through the shares that people have made with you as well, what's the common thread of all of the stories? What is it that makes them all fit together?
Oh man, Cam, what a great question. You know, I think for any writer would tell you, there's a story that you intend to write, and then there's the one that emerges as you're writing, right? And, you know, Cameron, all 10 of these people went through something very difficult and should have broken them, actually. The Vietnam War veteran whose helicopter was down behind enemy lines and comes back to a world that forces him to take that uniform off and deny he ever defended the nation. The high school teacher who took me in when I was 16 and I had nowhere to go, who was also battling alcoholism at the same time and loneliness, and wondered if he was a lighthouse, a biological uncle that I met many years later who was orphaned as I was, to a family who lost their 18-year-old daughter to a mental health crisis, to a family separation. I mean, these were tough things, and yet the way in which they responded to it is that other common thread that connects them all together. And to a person, it was fascinating when I reached out to them and I said, would you be willing to be part of the book? And they all, to a person, either they or their families had the exact same reaction. Well, why me? I'm just an ordinary person. Like, why would you write about me? To which I said, that's exactly why I want to write about you. So they'd all been through something. They responded to it in a different way. And they also had this just natural humility about it. So at different points in my life, when I met them, they made me really stop and reflect a bit, either on a situation or a circumstance or my own life journey. I think we all have people like that around us, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily the big influences, because our families are supposed to be influences like that. This is more about, you know, that elementary school teacher, you know, something she said to you, you know, the first boss, the person who brought you into the world of radio, for example, like those people are who we're talking about. And here's the last thing I say about that. The older we get, the more those people grow in significance to us, because you realize if it wasn't for them, I might not be on this journey that I'm on. And like the lighthouse, you never know who sees you, right? You never know who's drawing strength and example and courage just from your very presence in the world. Sometimes we think I've got to do something heroic, you know, and I got to do something that lands me on the nightly news. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that idea. I think it's the small things. It's the small things that have been the arc of our lives.
Along those lines, talk about the value that each of us has to other individuals, whether it be, this is the kind of the way I say it is, you know, whether you're out at a diner, whether you're dealing with a waitress, whether you're with a checkout person or whatever, just the smile and have a good day can make such a difference in somebody's life.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I'll give you a really good example of this. My wife and I were getting our licenses renewed. We went together, and Karen, I walked up to the counter, the clerk behind the counter, she was having a bad day. and man, I asked her something. It was a simple question. She really snapped at me, and I just let it go. I'm like, okay, she's having a bad day. And that's all I said. Well, my wife goes to another station, like two away. So you did not know we were together. Mm-hmm. And so I start like pretending like we're not married. So I say over to her, I'm like, so, hey, lady, are you married? And she says, like, sometimes. So she and I are having like this banter back and forth, but the people behind the counter don't know that we're married. So, I mean, she and I, and then Karen, so here's the beauty of it. My wife has been in denial about needing glasses for a long time. So now she's got to stare through the goggles, right? And I've been trying to tell her to get glasses. I'm having a field day because she's struggling. And so we were just having such a great time, right? I finished early. I stepped away. I went out into the parking lot. And then she comes out several minutes later. And she says to me that the clerk who was giving me a hard time walked over to her and gave her a hug. And she said, you know, I really needed to see the two of you today because I was having a bad day. I was having a bad day. And, you know, it means a temporary interaction. Might not ever see her again. Probably won't, actually, you know, because, you know, I don't frequent the registry of motor vehicles that often. If I can help it, right? Try to do that online. But every interaction has that kind of power, right? That it can be just the very thing that somebody needs in the moment. A lot of us wake up in the midst of a struggle that's not evident by looking at us. You know, we kind of harbor a lot of our pains quietly. So yeah, just that kind word, a returned smile. And that's especially for people who serve us, because the pandemic has landed on that sector in a particularly difficult way. You know, you're in a restaurant, you see somebody with a name tag, use their name when you address them. That lets them know that I see your humanity, that this hierarchy of you serving me, you know, that's not really the relationship. The relationship is, you know, I'm a human being and you're a human being. So, I mean, I grew up in a blue collar working class town, so I was around that a lot. I mean, I know. Ask what time did your shift start? When you're going home? And small things like that is a way of telling people that they matter.
Do you think that since social media and COVID as well, separating people so much, how much more important are those person-to-person few words that we have each day?
Well, I mean, the very nature of social media is taking on different intent than we thought. It was intended to provide community, right? And what it's done is purposefully alienate us and create these echo chambers, so much so that we think that the most important thing that we can know about each other is what makes us different. And those person-to-person connections actually tell you a really different story. You have to work at it a little bit. You have to make yourself available, to find those common threads, you know, those common connections. And there's so much hanging in the balance of doing so, because on this current path we're on, you know, that's going to lead to no good end. Most important thing I think I know about you is your politics or your faith expression. Then I miss this deeper kind of connection that you and I might have and that we can also find. So even the things that are a source of disagreement to us actually take on a very different understanding. And I'm reminded of this all the time. One of the people that I wrote about was somebody I bumped into on a train. I was describing to her that I was writing about people that I did not know about. And that was my mother and father, who I did not know. But the way I'm saying this to her is if she would not have any idea what I was talking about until she stops me and says, well, actually, I just met my father a few years ago. And so in a moment like that, you know, I would have never thought that was the case. And then, you know, the way that she had established a relationship with her father, that was never going to happen for me, but she was doing so in a way that was forgiving and understanding. And at the time that I met her, I really wasn't in that place. When I remember just walking away, I didn't tell her that, but I just remember walking away thinking you probably need to revisit how you're thinking about your own parents. But she in that moment doesn't know that interaction is affecting me like that. And I think that's true for every single one of us. You don't know how our interaction is actually touching and affecting somebody else, might get them to think a little bit differently about a situation or circumstance, or like the lighthouse itself, give them the strength to get through a situation.
Now, if we are going through hard times in our lives and we're having a hard time getting past the darkness, what are some of the keys to being a lighthouse, even though, like we've already mentioned, you can be a lighthouse when you're struggling?
Well, the reason I chose a lighthouse is because it symbolized a lot of those characteristics. You know, the first person I wrote about was the high school teacher who took me in. What was the thing that he did that we can all do? Well, he turned my doubts into a destination. The woman I just described to you, what was her lighthouse effect? It was that knowing that the first picture is not the full story. The Vietnam War veteran, what was it that he did? Well, he had the courage to encourage. And what I meant specifically by that was he was vulnerable, you know, in that moment. He would lose his son, actually, to a sudden heart attack on Thanksgiving 3 years ago. He's become a bereavement counselor. The family that lost their child to a mental health crisis, what was the thing that they do? They provide strength and honor. The woman who brought me books when I was a young boy trying to navigate a very difficult situation, what did she do? She gave from where she was with whatever she had, in this case, just a box of books that her three sons no longer read. We can all do that. We don't have to be wealthy. We don't have to have a large social media following. We don't have to have crowds cheering our name and our seemingly ordinariness. And we can have this extraordinary impact. There's a great Greek proverb that says a society grows great when the elders of that society plant trees in whose shade they know they will never sit. So every kindness, every interaction, you know, does plant that seed. And though you may never see it, isn't that the essence of faith, right? To put some goodness in the land and belief, right? That something positive will emerge from it.
And where is the hope? It seems like so much in the world today, so many people are having a hard time finding faith, finding hope, finding something to believe in, finding a way to believe in themselves. Where's the road to get back to all that?
The absence of hope in society today is because we have our ladders against the wrong walls. You know, we're looking to the celebrated, the celebrity. We're looking to news outlets that have their own business to drive, I guess you might say it that way. We look to our current generation of politics. That's not solving anything either. So I understand why there's a loss of hope. And I understand hope's like power. I mean, I understand how universal it is, but hope's still it's a waiting game, isn't it? You can hope for a lot of things. You can sit there and hope for something to happen. But the people that I wrote about and the most influential people in all of our lives, they don't hope, believe it or not. They do. They react in a very specific way. They're still reacting in a very specific way. And it is, as we pointed out earlier, it's the small things. And that's a daily practice. I mean, you know, social media, we talked about earlier, has taken over our lives, but there's algorithms and dissonance and discord. You have to, you know, kind of make your judgments about what you want in your life and what you don't, what influences you and what does not, and then who you're around. I mean, I very purposefully don't have anybody in my life who is not uplifting and celebrating me. And I'd like to think that that's what I'm trying to do as well. In my house, a phrase we say all the time, we're happy for that person. So you don't spend a lot of time in jealousy and envy and trying to chip away at somebody's success. That was their success. You'd be happy for them. Lastly, I would say always be open to having that impact on somebody else. And I'm not talking about the victories per se, right? Because the victories, those are easy to tell. What I found, Cameron, is what people often need is the uncertainty, the times that you didn't have the answers, the time you didn't know how it was going to work out, the time when it did seem, as was the case for me quite a few times, when I felt all was lost. I remember sneaking back at this time of year to my dorm room in college because I had no place else to go. Three times over the course of my life, I had been displaced during the holidays. And I didn't create that. I didn't ask for that, but I was going to make it my responsibility. And I say that to say that people could look at me and say, well, you know, he's an accomplished author and writer. But that's not how I see it. I remember those moments of trying to find my own, you know, chance in the world. And we should share those moments too, because oftentimes the pain of our past is a present reality for somebody else. And they see in our victory the possibility of their own.
That's good stuff. And again, the book, I'll show it to our viewers whenever the listeners are going, I don't see anything. But
it's a great cover, though.
Yes, it is. It is. It's the Lighthouse Effect. And Steve, I want to make sure and let the listeners, the viewers know where they can find more about not only the book, but the mission and the feat that it's been taking on itself as well.
You can find the book anywhere that books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Zondervan's a publisher, so zondervan.com as well. Great partnership that I have with Zondervan. I've actually also created a masterclass that accompanies a book that you can Google as well. And if all else fails, you can find me on social media and stevepemberton.io. And I do, through all of those platforms, Cameron, encourage people to share their stories. Like literally just before you and I jumped on, I received an email from somebody who heard me speak years ago. And she read my book and her email like stopped me in my tracks. And she was in essence asking, how do I deal with all the loss that I've had? I'm glad that I have those platforms, but she sent that quite literally to my website. And I want to encourage people to share their stories, actually. I mean, that's the reason that I have the platforms that I do, because I have found that we're all inspired by those stories that are all around us that might be hiding.
That's right. And again, check out the Lighthouse Effect anywhere you get books. And stevepemberton.io, is that what you said? Was the website?
Stevepemberton.io. You got it.
All right. Find him on the
social. Cameron.
There you go. Well, Steve, it has been a privilege, a pleasure to visit with you today. I tell you, I hope that we can catch up in the new year, even delve a little deeper, if you will.
That would be great. And I see we are both members of the Bearded Society, so all the more reason to connect.
That's right. Well, Steve, great for your time. And again, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Happy holidays and a good new year as well.
And the same to you and your family, Cameron. Good spending some time with you.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 161st episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at GQWithCam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit our merch store where we've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, and more. That's gqwithcam.com/shop. If you have a special guest idea, you can email me, Cameron@gqwithcam.com. Thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your evening.